You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everyone, and how are you all doing this evening? Commander Garcia is not going to be joining us this evening, so we've got our really dear friends, Dick and Ann Barenbeck, to join us this evening. And we've got a special guest coming on. His name is Matt Vadum. He is author of Subversion, Inc., on how Obama's acorn red shirts is still terrorizing and ripping off American taxpayers. Do you ever get the feeling America's mounting problems are too grave to have happened by accident? You're far from alone. America is under siege as radicals determined to pulverize the U.S. Constitution, deliberately bankrupt the nation, destroy the electoral system, and drive the economy into the ground. Matt is going to be on with us in a short bit to discuss his book. And while we're waiting for him, I'm going to go and screen a call really quick. Dick and Ann had gone to the Tea Party Florida Convention, which was held at the State Convention Center this weekend at Daytona Beach. Good evening, Dick and Ann. How are you?
Good evening, Paula.
And we're just fine.
That was a fantastic convention. They had a lot of super, super good speakers there. It was very educational. We had John Casey on this show, and there was another gentleman there that was also talking about our global warming and the ice ages and stuff. And it mirrored quite a bit what John Casey has been saying. They do disagree on a few small, minor points, but basically they are both in agreement, and they were, the one spoke, and then John got up and spoke again. There was another great speaker that was talking about Islam and what they are trying to do in this country. That is not pretty the way they're going about trying to take us over, and they're trying to get our courts to recognize their laws. And, of course, their laws have no business within our country. If you want to live by the laws in your country, stay in your country. Your laws have no effect in this country. Who else did we... We've seen a number of people that were running for office that were in a debate that was very good.
Sheriff Mack was there.
Sheriff Mack from Arizona, isn't he? Pardon?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, he fought a law that Clinton got into effect.
The Brady Law.
The Brady Law, and managed to beat the government with their law and got the law thrown out. The Brady Law was basically a law that said, you will do all of the checking of everybody that wants to buy a gun. You will see who has what guns, et cetera, et cetera. And you will do all this with money from your own government. We will not give you any funding for this. And they looked at this stuff and they said, we can't do this. Number one, it's against the law. And the sheriffs were actually threatened with charges if they did not do this stuff. So Sheriff Mack got together with another sheriff and they both filed a lawsuit against the Brady Bill, and they defeated it.
And they used the 10th Amendment to defeat it. And that's what we need to do with more things.
Yes. Right now what Sheriff Mack does is tries to get other sheriffs to become basically federalists, to stand up for the laws and the authority that they have, and tell the federal government, you're not going to bring your stuff into my county. I am the law here, and you don't bring it in. That's what Sheriff Mack is doing at the present time. I did talk to him a number of times. I tried to get Sheriff Mack into Volusia County a little over a year ago to come and talk to all the different 912 groups. And for some reason, the communications broke down. Anyway, I talked to him at the convention, and he wants to come on our show.
Wonderful.
He'd be very thrilled to come on the show. He is a fantastic speaker.
Great. Well, speaking of being on the show, we've got Matt Vadim on the line right now. Good evening, Matt. How are you? We want to thank you for joining us on the show this evening. We've
Thanks
got Dick Barenbach on the line.
Thanks
good evening, Matt.
On.
Dick Barenbach here.
Hi, Dick. How are you?
I'm good. I'm sorry about the mix-up with the time zone.
Don't worry about it.
I've been. We were at a convention this weekend, the Tea Party convention in Daytona Beach. We were there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and trying to put some last-minute stuff together. I typed my message to you in a hurry this morning and didn't even realize I wrote in Central Time.
I think maybe I'm going to have to proofread his emails from now on.
Well, it all worked out.
The book you wrote, Subversion, wasn't that before Glenn Beck got into it?
I wrote the book after that.
After that, okay.
Yeah, the book came out in May. I finished the manuscript, put the final touches on it in January of this year. But I had been on Glenn Beck's program quite a few times back in 2009, explaining ACORN and the Cloward Piven strategy to him, which apparently he had never heard of before I went on the show.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah, really. I think I was the first to tell him about it. So, you know, it was. I was glad to have the opportunity to reach a mass audience.
Oh, definitely. Why don't you tell us about the book?
Okay, well, the book is about it's the history of ACORN, the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now, and a lot of it goes into Obama's involvement in ACORN. It's a radical group that came out of the 1960s. It was created by another group called the National Welfare Rights Organization. And what these people did in the 60s was they took angry welfare recipients and then they went on a rampage and they invaded welfare offices and busted them up, caused a lot of property destruction. And one of their best organizers was a guy named Wade Rathke. He worked for the Welfare Rights Organization in Springfield, Massachusetts. And he was successful in the sense that he caused a riot that lasted for several days and caused millions of dollars of damage. So when the National Welfare Rights Organization wanted to diversify and create this thing that came to be known as ACORN in 1970, obviously he was the right guy to hire because he had a track record for effective organizing and causing mayhem and destruction. And that's what these radical neo-communists believe in.
You're talking about back in the 60s, and when you mentioned that, for some reason I was having flashbacks to the Clintons and what they were doing with their lives at that point in time. And I believe that, I don't know if they were mixed up in that particular group, but I know for a while they were out of this country. They didn't want to, Willie didn't want to get himself involved in Vietnam and was afraid of being drafted.
Well, Hillary Clinton was a big fan of Saul Alinsky, the father of modern community organizers, community organizing, who wrote a book called, very influential book called Rules for Radicals. And
yes.
She did her senior college thesis on Saul Alinsky. And worked in his office for a while, or observed him in his office, and she was he was so impressed by the young Hillary Rodham at the time, as she was known, that he offered her a job, which she took down, I think, to go to law school instead.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these are the same sorts of people. Saul Alinsky and the two communist professors, Francis Fox Piven and Richard Cloward, they and other people got together to create the National Welfare Rights Organization that gave birth to ACORN in 1970. So it's all the same people. They overlap a lot.
Right, and I'm sure they're all intertwined in one way or another.
They are.
Obama, of course, is a new player to the game. He was off doing other things at the time, and they seen a use for him and managed to recruit him in.
I don't believe that too many people know how deeply involved Hillary Clinton was in all of this.
Well,
and
Hillary
I don't
Clinton
think
was involved
that.
in the early years in in radical circles in the 1960s. She had a transformation. She used to be a Republican. She was a Goldwater girl, and she had backed Barry Goldwater's doomed presidential run against President Lyndon Johnson in 1964, but over time, I guess, when she went to college, she went from the right, she veered sharply to the left, and on her journey there, she went to study Saul Alinsky and write about him at his community organizing group. Which still exists, by the way. It's called the IAF, the Industrial Areas Foundation. It's based in Chicago. So she I don't think she was involved with ACORN in the early years. She was involved when she was first lady in Arkansas. Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton had some dealings with ACORN. But, you know, there's a gap where I don't think they were involved because ACORN was very new. Well, it was only created in 1970, and they didn't actually head off to Arkansas till later in the 1970s. But they did end up getting involved with ACORN, but I don't think they were in on the ground floor, so to speak.
Are you aware of what ACORN is doing at the present moment? Of course, they're operating with a different name at the present time. Trying to think of the name that they're using right now.
Oh, they're using many
communities for change.
About 25 new groups.
Right.
And they're
once,
using different names. There's the
once
old group,
ACORN the, was defunded by the government.
Mm-hmm.
How now? that doesn't make sense. Where are these new groups, such as Communities for Change, getting their funding from, and who's okaying this funding?
You're talking about New York Communities for Change, which has been deeply
yes.
involved in the Occupy Wall Street protests.
Yes.
They have been getting money from liberal foundations. So liberal charities
okay.
give them money.
So it
and,
isn't
and
the
what
government
they've been getting
that is
so far,
limit.
But most of the new ACORN front groups, the ACORN successor groups, are if they haven't already applied for federal grants, they're going to. And we know this because they signed up for this. They filled out the paperwork, and they got these things called DUNS numbers, D-U-N-S, Data Universal Numbering System numbers. You get them from Dun and Bradstreet. And the only reason a nonprofit corporation would get one of these would be to be eligible for federal grants because it's required under the rules of the Office of Management and Budget when you seek federal grants as a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
So if they haven't gotten federal funds already, they're going to get them. Other parts of ACORN have gotten money from the Obama administration after the congressional ban. The most prominent is ACORN Housing, which didn't restructure itself. All it did was change its name. So ACORN Housing became Affordable Housing Centers of America, and they've gotten several hundred thousand dollars so far this year from Obama's Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD. And
mm-hmm.
the first grant was for about $80,000 and went through in March. And they were able to convince the Obama administration, I'm sure it didn't take a lot of convincing, that they were separate, that they had severed their ties to ACORN. But that's hogwash because they're most of the people involved are longtime ACORN activists. So you can't
right.
believe them when you say that they're not part of ACORN. So they are getting that money.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the park in New York that they are occupying? And
yes,
what's
Zuccotti
going on with
park.
The park? Pardon?
Zuccotti Park is a little park in Lower Manhattan. And that's where all the hippies and bums and anarchists and communists and rapists and muggers are now living together.
Now, I understand that park is not really public property. That's actually privately owned.
It's privately owned by someone who's, I can't remember the name of the corporation, but someone who is an Obama, a supporter of President Obama.
Was it Brookfield or something?
Paul, you recall the name of the
Brookfield
park?
Brookfield Properties, that sounds right.
Yeah, yes. It is.
Okay.
Properties, yep.
So it's happening with the permission of this Obama supporter.
Okay, let's go into Brookfield Properties a little bit. The attorney for Brookfield Properties, somehow he is related to the vice president, Mr. Biden, like it's his son.
Or son-in-law, I'm not sure about that.
Either son or son-in-law.
There are some ties, and I think it's pretty clear that they're doing this because they view this as helpful to the Obama administration, and the White House views this as helpful too, which is why President Obama and Vice President Joe Biden have been saying nice things about Occupy Wall Street, even as it gets more horrible and more violent with each passing day.
What are your impressions as to why the left wants them to do this? Where do you see them going with it?
Well, the left thinks that a lot of people on the left think that the way to change society is by having protests in the streets. And so Occupy Wall Street is part of that strategy. They think that if they get enough people together and make enough noise and cause enough trouble, that they're going to win political victories. So that's why they're massing in New York and in places like Oakland, California, and Boston and other places. And right here in Washington, D.C., they're in two different parks here. They think that if they get these people together, they can and have a show of force that they're going to make, that the government's going to do what they want them to do.
By demonstrations, you are thinking possibly even destructive demonstrations, basically riots, breaking windows, overturning cars, vandalism to
that's part of it.
Property.
They were muscling people at the Americans for Prosperity had the Defending the American Dream conference here this past Friday and Saturday, and a whole bunch of these Occupy Wall Street or Occupy DC people surrounded the SUV. It was a whole bunch of white kids surrounded the SUV of a black man who had his child in the back seat, and he was just trying to drive home. Now, you can imagine if a whole bunch of white people at a Tea Party rally had harassed a black man in an SUV, it would be on the cover of the New York Times.
Sure.
And they'd be talking about it for weeks. But because the left did this, they're just ignoring it. The media is just ignoring it. And the only people who've covered it have been websites such as the Daily Caller and the various Breitbart websites like biggovernment.com. So they also pushed an old lady down the stairs, a lady who is, I think, 78, down the stairs, and she had to be hospitalized on Saturday. All she was doing was trying to get into the D.C. Convention Center to attend the Ronald Reagan banquet being hosted by Americans for Prosperity. So these people are capable of violence.
These people must feel real good picking on a person of that age. It must make them feel very macho, brave, strong.
Well,
and when
it probably
in numbers,
does. They think that using – these are anarchists. They believe that using force in order to change society is perfectly okay. That's what these people live for an opportunity to confront authorities and destroy property and hurt people.
The reason I asked you the questions I did, I have my own thoughts. Now, if they start to riot, destroy property, vandalize buildings, steal the store owners' goods, whatever store they happen to break into, be it clothing, TV store, or whatever, food stores, that would give Obama reason to declare martial law. That would also give Obama reason to shut down any Tea Party gatherings, because obviously we can't be prejudiced and just shut down the left. We've got to shut down everybody.
Well, that is a theory that's floating around, and I don't know if it's, I can't speak to it, but the left views opportunities, it views crises as an opportunity to promote their political agenda. Look at the stock market collapse in 2008. That allowed a big government, that bank rescue package, TARP, to be approved. And a lot of conservative Republicans voted for it, not just liberal Democrats, because when people are frightened, you can stampede lawmakers into doing things they wouldn't normally do. And if things get really, really bad, I shudder to think what this administration is capable of doing.
I'm a retired law officer, 28 years, and I've got quite a bit of experience dealing with groups like that, and it all fits in with what has happened in the past, the thinking of those in the past, and why all of a sudden, after all of the Tea Party gatherings, is this group suddenly appearing in different major cities. And when the news media does talk to them, if they interview five people, each one of them has a different reason as to why they're there. There's no organization, no central person in charge trying to talk to the people, to cheer them on, to get them to do this, that, or the other thing. They are just there.
The whole thing is organized by radical groups. Acorn, successor Acorn groups have been deeply involved in organizing it. Another radical group called National People's Action is also behind it, and various anarchist outfits have also been involved in it. Labor unions, SEIU, AFL-CIO are involved. So, it's not like when an army marches to war, not everybody necessarily may know why they're fighting, but if they follow their orders, it doesn't really matter. Communists and anarchists are running the various occupations right now, which probably explains a lot of the violence that has recently been breaking out.
When I made that statement, what I was referring to, the Tea Parties have different speakers that are up talking to the groups. This is why we're here. This is the signs that we're carrying. This is what we want our government to do. It's true these radical groups are behind them, but they're what I call closet groups. They're getting some of the people to go, but they're staying in the background. They don't want to draw attention to themselves so everybody knows what's really going on.
Right. Well, that's why the Acorn Front Group, New York Communities for Change, that's why its leaders are so upset that they've been caught in the act paying people to attend these rallies.
Right.
What I've heard from conservative people who have gone there is that that Acorn is paying people of color to attend the Occupy Wall Street events because it's an overwhelmingly white crowd right now. And so they want to make it look like it's more of a movement that has broad support, among all segments of American society. Whereas right now, it's largely a bunch of spoiled, rich, and middle-class kids, artists, unemployed people, bums, and radical political activists. So...
They want to create
a certain public image.
Yeah. You'd mentioned before about this black fellow with his child in the car that was stopped. The white boys surrounded this car.
Right.
I went into the service in Yes, I went into the service in 1960, and we didn't really have those problems at that time. When I came out in 1963, obviously there was riots all over our country, basically over Vietnam. And I was advised by different friends once I returned, you don't drive here anymore, you don't drive over there, and you don't drive at this other place anymore, because more than likely they will stop you in your car and they will roll it over, and maybe you'll survive and maybe you won't. And I don't understand people like this fella in this SUV. I don't know of any bodies that can stop a car once you push the accelerator to the floor.
Well, I don't.
And that's exactly what I told them.
There, I don't know why. I don't think he wanted to. I don't think he wanted to run anybody over. But
that is precisely why he should. He has no idea what their intent is, and he has a right. He has a duty to defend that child's life.
Well, that's
and
true.
And if he feels threatened because they have surrounded his car, then it's time to remove the threat and get yourself out of that area. The best way to do it: floor the accelerator.
Yeah, I'm hoping that if it had gotten to that point where he felt that his life and the life of his child were in danger, that his natural instinct survival would have come through, and he would have just plain blown the horn and gone.
Well, I think the situation got diffused somehow, but...
Oh, thank God for that. Oh.
Right, but my point earlier was that if a bunch of white people had tried to prevent a black man in his car, at a tea party. If these had been Tea Party supporters, we'd never hear the end of it. And yet,
oh, definitely not.
We're not here. The mainstream media is silent on this. They don't. They just don't care.
I don't know why. I don't know if they really are mainstream media anymore. They were at one time. And they may get the listeners for their other TV shows, the family shows, the comedy shows, the drama shows, whatever. But I wonder if their news media is really the mainstream media yet. Or if more people aren't tuning to places like Fox or radio to find out what's really going on.
Well, personally, I believe it's leftist media now. No question.
Well, a lot of people are relying on alternative media, and that's a great thing because you can't. It's not just going to be the New York Times and the Washington Post and CBS and ABC and NBC and CNN calling all the shots anymore. They can't tell people what to think anymore. They can't set the agenda, and that has them worried, and they should be.
Good. Yeah. That's a good thing.
Yeah, it's absolutely a good thing. For example, when Nancy Pelosi was there with a Democratic congressman, and she brought her big gavel along, and they walked into the U.S. Capitol, and supposedly the N-word was being shouted at some of the black congressmen, the Democrats. They reported this, they said it had happened, and yet when Andrew Breitbart offered a $100,000 reward for anybody who could produce a video or audio recording of the N-word being said, nobody came forward. And the place was rife with recorders. Every second of that incident was recorded, whether on cell phone cameras or handheld cameras or other recording devices. So, and yet the mainstream media reported that this incident happened, and it never happened. And they wanted to pick everybody in the Tea Party as being crazy and a racist.
During some of the town hall meetings when Congress was back in their home territory, and there was a lot of people coming and really speaking out against what the politicians are doing. There, in one in particular, I can't remember the congressman's name, he was saying, or maybe it was a she, there was people in the audience wearing swastikas.
I think that was Pelosi.
Was that Pelosi? And of course,
I think,
the news media was
said that swastikas were all over the place at Tea Party rallies.
Yeah, there was news media at this one where she said she's seen them all over the place, and the news media, of course, was photographing the Tea Party people that were there. If they were even Tea Party people, they were local people that were upset.
Well, if there are any swastikas, probably a few people drew a picture of Obama and put a swastika on him to protest his behavior. No, if anybody was holding a swastika, you know, they weren't doing it with pride.
Right.
They were doing it out of, you know, mockery.
And then there was the famous Hillary Clinton being over in Asia someplace and getting off the helicopter and having to dodge bullets and run for her life.
Yeah, it never happened.
I find it interesting because when people of that magnitude, that status or whatever, go any place, the whole area is completely diffused. There is so much security, you couldn't get in with a hat pin. I mean, there's no way any enemy could get anywhere near to fire any shots at anything. And
well, they probably wouldn't have allowed her to land if there was any danger at all.
They wouldn't have. No, no.
No, they would have.
I mean,
they would have circled, or they would have landed, gone to refuel somewhere else, and waited for things to die down.
Right. So we have an awful lot of people on the left that see these. I don't know. Maybe they're still coming down from whatever hallucinogenic drugs they are on, that they can see bullets flying over their heads. They see people with swastikas. They see all this stuff that is not taking place. I don't know if it's wacky tobacco or what type of drugs that they're playing with, but obviously they're not within their right mind.
Well, it might also be more like mass hysteria. One person says it, and then other people want to believe it, so they believe it.
Mean
like
Chicken Little is running
trial,
around in Washington?
Right? Pardon me?
Chicken Little is running around in Washington?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they call Washington Disneyland on the Potomac River for a reason. they also call it Hollywood for ugly people.
Oh, dear.
A lot of unkind descriptions of this town.
Well, that's not right.
No, I don't mind the unkind descriptions. I recognize D.C. is not the real world.
No, but it's fun to visit.
It is fun. It's
fun. A nice
you're
place to
politics,
see you've been there and you're away
here.
From it.
But you got to keep a sense of perspective.
Yes, you do.
Very
it can almost be worse than Hollywood with all of these actors and actresses walking around, and they've played so many roles they don't know what reality is anymore, so they just live in their little fantasy worlds from their last movie or TV show that they did.
Well, that's kind of the point that we've gotten to with all these candidates. They don't have a platform, it seems, I've noticed in the last couple of weeks, because I don't know. Now, with Herman Cain and his constant things that are happening with him, I don't know who has a good platform anymore. So, you know, who are we supposed to vote for on the Republican side?
Right. I noticed somebody at the convention. Well, there's a bunch of people, a group supporting Ron Paul. They had a table set up for him and had some of his literature they're distributing and stuff. And I talked to one of the fellas there, and I pointed to his pin and I said, you know, you've got a real nice man there running for president. The only problem is he can't win. It's impossible. And he said, why can't he win? I said, he is too honest. He does not know how to lie.
You're talking about Herman Cain.
You have to play the political game if you're going to get elected. Lie, stir things up. I said, Ron Paul is an honest man. He's a decent man. And nobody like that's going to get elected. We only had one, or two of them, actually, Lincoln and Ronald Reagan. And since then, we've been going down the tubes.
That's true.
I'm forgetting a few of the first three or four.
Well, I left a few of them out there, but
yeah.
I wanted to show you a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's a shame the way we, like you say, Paula, where are these people coming from? What is their platform? It's like wherever they go, they're going to say what that type of people want to hear. Now, with Mr. Herman Cain, he has this 999 policy that he has been touting. The rumor is it's not a 999 policy. It's a 9999 policy.
What's
he's
the
not
nine?
Telling us about the four. He's got another nine he's not telling us about.
That's the other nine.
Come
out, right?
Pardon, Paula?
Well, it's supposed to be income tax, sales tax, corporate tax, and then they're saying it's also going to be withholding tax. Oh, wait a minute. You're texting that twice. I don't know anything about that. That was a rumor I heard. And I think we're getting way off the subject from Acorn. I'm going to ask another question about that.
We have
a minute,
the subject of Acorn and so on, but...
Yeah.
I went to see Herman Cain's speech at the press club last week. It was a good speech. At the National Press Club at D.C.?
Yeah. I am...
They had 999 cupcakes.
Yeah. I'm a Cain supporter. My only problem with Cain is he believes in the Federal Reserve. And I think
he
should study...
He was part of it, too.
Yes. The Federal Reserve is not good.
I think that's why we're splitting our vote in this House, because I cannot, after reading Creature from Jekyll Island, I cannot support anybody that supports the Fed, because they started this whole thing, the whole progressive movement.
Well,
period.
The Fed, the Fed seems to have made things worse.
Yes, they have.
They don't do
I would
much.
Like to ask the Acorn question, if that's allowed.
Oh, no, Acorn, okay.
Where do you see
something
them?
I know about.
Going from here, and how much trouble are we going to have during voting from them? And how honest...
Acorn has been restructuring, as you know. So in the various states, the vote fraud division of Acorn is still active. It's called Project Vote. And this is the part of Acorn that Obama worked for in 1992 in Chicago. He led a very successful voter registration and get out the vote drive that helped elect a very radical liberal to the U.S. Senate. Her name was Carol Moseley Braun, and she was thoroughly corrupt, and she only served one term in the Senate from 93 to 99. And that is where Obama cut his teeth as an organizer, and he won widespread acclaim as a result of that campaign. And he became deeply involved with Acorn, and he trained some of its people. He lectured there, and he worked very closely with Acorn and its various units over the years. They were his people. And there's lots of pictures of him with Acorn activists as well. So it's all pretty well documented.
Why are the other people in Washington not doing their job and pulling the plug on Obama and all of the Acorn units and demanding that Holder prosecute?
Well, that is an interesting question, and I don't really have an answer for you. There was something good that happened just today, though. California Congressman Daryl Issa, who's chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, that's the committee that does a lot of investigations, he is demanding that the U.S. attorney, one of the U.S. attorneys for New York, that it investigate the Acorn spinoff group, the New York Communities for Change group, and its involvement in Occupy Wall Street. It has been reportedly New York Communities for Change has reportedly been using fraud in its fundraising efforts. So they've asked people from unions, for example, to contribute money in order to help fight PCBs and other chemicals that might be found in public schools. And instead, they've been diverting the money to Occupy Wall Street. And so Congressman Issa, Chairman Issa, just wrote a letter today to the United States Attorney for the Eastern District of New York and Brooklyn, Miss Loretta Lynch, asking her to look into this.
Right.
So that's a step in the right direction.
Finally, whether it goes anywhere or not.
According to Ameripac, after Fox News revealed that Acorn was behind the Occupy Wall Street protests, the group is frantically shredding documents and urging their members not to speak to the media. New York Communities for Change is doing everything they can to cover their dirty tracks. And that would not surprise
me. Well, yeah, that's standard operating procedure at Acorn.
Yes.
Whenever they get into trouble, they do shred documents and they clamp down, and they throw their weight around and threaten people and fire people to make sure that they don't speak to the press. Acorn has done this for a long time, so they're still using the old playbook. The person in charge of New York Acorn, the executive director, is a man named John Kest, and he is the brother of the former national executive director of Acorn, Steve Kest. And they've been involved with Acorn for decades, and this is just what they do whenever they run into trouble. And the other big thing they do is they call people racist. I don't think they've played the race card yet, but give them some time and they will.
They will. New York Communities for Change has also ordered their employees not to use their cell phones, text, or make landline calls to the New York City headquarters. Maybe they think their lines are tapped and their phones are being listened to, which I'm sure
they
are.
They get really paranoid, but
that's good.
That's okay. It's going to make them less effective.
Oh, yes.
I have one more
worried
question.
They're going to be scared to do anything. So
I have one more question.
This is all good news, I think.
I hope so. There was an article a little while back that they found 400,000 fraudulent votes through Acorn. And I'm thinking, with that many fraudulent votes in a couple of states, I can't remember how many, but it wasn't that many, and the way you can flip votes, not report some and report others that were not true, how close do you think the race might have been in 08? And how are we going to combat that kind of thing? Because I'm absolutely sure it's going to happen again in 2012. How much danger are we in from this Acorn stuff?
Okay, well, I don't think voter fraud could have made the difference in 08 because Obama won in a blowout. Like, he trounced John McCain, the Republican. It's situations where the margin is small, where voter fraud can make a difference. There are at least 54 convictions of Acorn employees, people connected to Acorn, for voter fraud and related offenses. That 400,000 figure that you were throwing around, I think you may be referring to their 2008 voter drive, when they claim to have signed up 1.2 million or so new voters. And 450,000 of those registrations were bogus and they were thrown out.
So that could be what it was. It was a while ago.
So that might be what you're referring to. Mm-hmm. Voter fraud by itself is very difficult to detect, especially when you have a lot of absentee balloting. How are you going to prove that it's fraudulent? Very, very hard to do.
I don't think
so. A lot of voter fraud probably goes unnoticed by the authorities, and they only catch somebody when they slip up.
Right. This is one of the things that does concern me. Do you remember what state it was, Dick, that they were going to send out absentee ballots to everybody. And I'm thinking that's a real good place where you can do
Washington
an absentee ballot.
And that way.
Okay, yeah.
I don't think absentee ballots should be allowed in any state, in any voting district. If you cannot be home on voting day, obviously voting is not that important to you, and you forfeit your right to vote. If you're going to go on vacation, cancel your vacation so that you go either before or after the polls close.
Well, that's the way I feel. It's too important to
the only people
put a question on my vote.
That I would say should be allowed absentee ballots are those in the military service.
Right,
and
but then when
those.
They cast their absentee ballots, Democrat lawyers challenge them and have them try to have them thrown out because about two-thirds to three-quarters of people in the military are Republicans.
Yes, they are.
So that's why Democrats attack, you know, because it's not a natural thing to do if you belong to a party that hates America. Signing up to defend America isn't really a logical thing to do. So, like, there are, you know, lots of good Democrats out there. I'm not saying they're all bad people. But the party has been taken over by the radical 1960s leftovers. And the core of the party, they have a thoroughly anti-American policy platform. They really don't like America. Just listen to Nancy Pelosi.
Well, then they should leave.
Yeah.
They should leave along with the illegal immigrants.
If only that were that simple.
Yeah, wouldn't it be? It would be so nice. But.
Well, Florida passed a real nice law down here. Of course, you know, the state of Florida is very liberal in allowing people to have concealed weapons. If you are not a convicted felon and you can have weapons, you can get a permit to carry a concealed weapon.
Right.
They went one step further. Most states, I'll take the state of Minnesota, for example. That's where I was a deputy sheriff. If you are accosted by somebody on the street, you must try and flee before you hurt them. If you don't try and flee and you do damage to their bodies, you could be held liable because you did not attempt to retreat.
Right.
Florida went one step further and made it a little bit better. They said, if you are someplace where you are can legally be on the street, the sidewalk, in a business place that's open for business, and you are accosted and you are in fear, you do not need to retreat. You can draw your gun and shoot. No retreat is necessary.
And I believe that the crime has gone down here since then.
Florida crime has really dropped. Where you see a lot of problems is in Orlando, Orange County area, and it's usually black-on-black crime is where most of it's taking place right now in the state of Florida. But if more states would handle that, can you imagine seeing a bunch of Black Panthers standing at a polling place telling people who to vote for, and they're holding their little clubs in their hands? A person like me would come along and say, why are you bringing a club to a gunfight? A club does not work at a gunfight.
That's a good way of looking at it.
The only way, I'm not really a radical. I believe in standing up for my rights, and I don't believe in backing down. I've been on my own since I was 17. That's when I enlisted in the service. And I've been on my own the rest of my life, and I've had to look out for myself. If something can be done peacefully, by all means, do it. But I have also found as an officer, when you confront people like the Black Panthers and some of these other radical groups, they run. They run very quickly. They can't stand confrontation. And when you go back at them, they don't know what to do with it. They like to have everybody outnumbered and shout everybody down. That is one of their tactics. And if we start to confront them, If they want to come up with 20 people to disrupt something, fine. Let's come up with 300 and surround them and say, you're going to do what? And see how fast they can run away in their disabled vehicle, because I'd have their distributor caps in my hand.
But so nobody's going to pull anything over on you.
No. We we have to confront them with their own logic, with their own tactics.
Well, that is what needs to be done. The trouble is I have an awful difficult time turning that kind of mental thought around, because I don't think like that at all. Maybe I just don't think quickly on my feet like you do. You have some good retorts. But that's what I feel that we need to do, is figure out what to say to these people so that they have nothing to come back with.
I've had 28 years practice to get those retorts down pretty good.
Yeah, well, I've been living with you for 24 of those, and I haven't figured out how to do it myself.
Have you ever said, are you feeling lucky today, punk?
Oh.
I'll tell you what I did once. It was rather hilarious, and why I didn't start laughing out loud, I don't know. I had pursued a stolen car. The person bailed out of the car, started to run. I got out of my car and said, stop or I'll shoot. He stopped. I went and handcuffed him, put him in my car. I'm calling for a tow truck for the stolen car. And this kid says, would you have really shot me? And I said, would you repeat that? He said, yes, if I kept running, would you have shot me? I didn't say nothing. I got out of the car. I opened the back door. And I told him to turn sideways. I'm acting like I'm taking his cuffs off, which I wasn't, but I was fiddling around back there. He says, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to take your cuffs off, and you can run again. And then you will find out if I'll shoot or not. He said, no, that's okay, that's okay. I said, I thought you'd feel that way. But
some people occasionally will confront Acorn, and in the past it hasn't turned out too well. Like in 2005, Acorn raided Liberty Tax Service, a company in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and it turned into a riot, and lots of people were arrested. They went in and attacked and spat upon employees,
mm-hmm.
because the company, Liberty Tax Service, wouldn't give money to Acorn. And so the company eventually just caved into the pressure and started paying Acorn $50,000 a year.
Oh, my.
So that's blackmail.
I would say so. I'm no lawyer, but it sure sounds like extortion to me.
Yeah.
And where is the state attorney general in this whole fracas? Is he hiding under his bed, or what's he doing? Or
no,
she?
I think because the company caved in and paid the money, they didn't get involved.
I had a similar deal a long time ago. Nothing like it, but I was a patrolman on the street, and I noticed this one parked vehicle at a meter, and I issued a tag to the vehicle. I ran the plate and found out they had like 15 outstanding warrants for parking tickets. So the next day, I determined roughly what time the vehicle would leave that area, knowing that this is around the St. Paul University campus of Minnesota, University of Minnesota. And I went back the next day and caught the person getting into the car and asked them for their identification, informed them that they had 15 warrants out for their arrest, and I would be taking her to jail. And I took her to jail. Her husband, she was a student. Her husband happened to be a newly graduated attorney, and he wanted to flex his legal wings and filed a lawsuit against the city for false arrest. The city caved in and paid him off so they wouldn't get into court. I thought the county attorney was going to blow a fuse. They wanted that case in court so bad they could taste it. But like this other company, they caved in and paid the money.
Yeah, which makes it difficult for the authorities to move forward.
Yeah. They had no basis for their lawsuit. The warrants were good. They were outstanding. Our county policy was anything over 5 misdemeanor warrants, you lock the person up. That is county policy.
Well, I don't know anything about the Liberty Tax Service there, but I'm wondering if they
Well, it's in my book, Subversion Incorporated.
Excuse me?
It's in my book, Subversion Incorporated, about Acorn and Obama.
I have to get that.
These do.
I do. I have not got it yet. It's
available on Amazon.
Okay.
Yeah, there's all sorts of tales of Acorn shaking down businesses.
That is strange. I can't imagine these people in this day and age caving in when they can force the government's hand and make the government give them protection.
Well, I do know one aspect of that. There's so much of the judicial system that is now on the liberal side. Maybe they knew they couldn't get anywhere. I don't know. But I know down in southern Florida with Durham, it's all sewed up. Those people have been burnt out and shot at and forced out of the country. And their land confiscated. And they can't get anywhere in the courts. That's why Ada Fernandez took her grandson and left the country, because she was afraid for her life. Now, that's how bad it's gotten in this country.
Our courts are corrupted. I have to agree with you there. If they weren't corrupted, agencies like Acorn would have been disbanded a long time ago.
It's very difficult. Well, there's a great reluctance in our society to go after troublemakers on the left, whether they're labor unions or radical groups like Acorn.
So then we have to change it. 2012 has got to get the majority in both houses and has to be a start for a change. They've had 100 years, and we've got to go forward from here to change it back.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on tonight, Matt. It's been very interesting.
Well, thanks very much.
And we're definitely
going
to have to get that book. Have you got a website?
Sure, MatthewVadum.com. Vadum is V-A-D-U-M. .com. I work full-time at a conservative think tank here in D.C. called Capital Research Center. That's capitalresearch.org.
Okay.
Where we put up all of our research on leftist groups.
Yes, interesting. We'll have to look at
that. Okay, say that again. Capital Research?
Capital Research Center. The website is capitalresearch.org. My personal website is Matthew, M-A-T-T-H-E-W, Vadum, V as in Victor, A-D-U-M as in Mother, .com. And the book is Subversion Incorporated, published this year by WND Books.
Super. Well, thank you for coming on
the
show again.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Invite me on again when it strikes you.
Thanks.
We will do that.
I love that.
Yes.
Okay, well, thanks very much. Have a good night.
You too.
You too. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
We got a little off the subject, but it wasn't too bad.
No, I think it was awesome. You know, he knows his stuff, and I'm looking forward to getting his book and reading it.
I know my wife will get the book.
Oh, yeah. I have a library.
I'm going to build another small building on my property, and what's going to be in that building is just all the books my wife bought, and I'm going to have a bookstore there and sell them all off and get rich.
Anyway, the four I bought this weekend and that one and a couple others that just came, I think I'm up to about 40 since the beginning of 2008 now.
Wow.
One thing wonderful about a wife that loves to read as much as she does, we never fight. She's always reading a book and I'm watching TV.
There you go.
Well, hopefully Tom will be back with us Wednesday. He said that as long as I didn't have a guest right now to hold off, I had one in mind, but he said hold off. He said he's got some things he wants to bring up.
Okay.
So if he doesn't show up, we'll talk about snow shuffles.
Mine is yours.
Yes. Why don't you give us the last word again, Paula?
Okay, well, recently the president announced that all American troops that are now in Iraq will be home by the holidays. 9 years after it started, the war in Iraq will be over. We should all pray for the safety of the men and women in service to our country every day. But extra prayers right now would be a good idea, and we want our patriot soldiers to come home safe. No family should lose one of our own in these final days. Please show appreciation to veterans this Friday by displaying the American flag, attending Veterans Day observances, and thanking any veteran from any era that is met. Tell them that you are proud of them and what they have done for your country and the sacrifices that they have made for you, your freedoms, and your liberties. Your families love and miss you very much and are waiting for you to come home.
Amen.
Amen.
Everyone have a good night, and we'll see you on Wednesday.
Yes, we'll see you Wednesday. Good night.
Good night.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.